Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. In a week when Steve Bruce used his first Saturday afternoon off in about 40 years to put aside all thoughts of human rights abuses, people in Arab dress, sports washing and being dismissed by watching England play cricket in Dubai.
It was also a week in which Jeff Stelling, the host of Soccer Saturday, announced that this would be his last season hosting the much-copied show. So you could say, the countdown is on. Don't know what he will do next, but I hope he hasn't any thoughts of an acting career after seeing his surprisingly unconvincing performances in Ted Lasso in the role of Jeff Stelling, the host of Soccer Saturday.
And also, the Queen was told to rest for 2 weeks, meaning she will be unavailable for England's games against Albania and San Marino, and also Germany's games against Liechtenstein and Armenia.
And speaking of Ted Lasso, as I was, the Emmy award-winning show about the hapless American manager of a Premier League club, you'll remember Mitt Romney, the first man named after an article of winter clothing to run for US president since Snood Jackson in the 1860s. Well, he dressed up as Ted Lasso for Halloween.
What?
So maybe football will take off over there after all one day. And meanwhile, Boris Johnson dressed up for Halloween as the scarecrow out of The Wizard of Oz being played by Roy Hattersley. And nobody noticed.
Excellent.
And you remember back in the summer when we started this, we were talking about the Olympics and about a story in which a German coach of an athlete in the modern pentathlon had punched a horse.
Oh, yes.
And how the radio reporter pronounced his name Karl Reiser. Yes. Like he was a war criminal.
Yes.
Well, this week, there's a story about how, as a result of the Karl Reiser incident, the modern pentathlon is planning to drop the horse riding element altogether, which I guess will make it an even more modern tetrathlon. But so Karl Reiser has actually destroyed not only his reputation, but also his entire sport.
Yes.
So one for the CV there, going forward.
You should, the horses themselves shouldn't be blamed, should they? They're missing
they're
out.
They're being punished.
They're missing out on the big stage.
Yeah, well, one of them misbehaved, but the rest of them shouldn't carry the can.
No.
No, exactly. Anyway, before we check out the cut crystal champagne glasses on the luxury yachts of the EPL, let's take a quick moment to grab a paper cup to bail out the punctured dinghy that is the very bottom of the EFL, where it's very close, if not exactly all that exciting. Oldham lost at home again, it's kind of our thing, and slipped from 21st back down to 22nd in the table, so this season not so much a roller coaster ride, more a trip on the Romney Hythen Dymchurch light railway. No thrills, definitely no spills, and you can go on it right after eating a large lunch. In fact, that's actually recommended, as there's a chance you might fall asleep and miss the whole thing. Two mentions of Romney in the same episode.
Very good, yeah.
Anyway, our next six games feature the current top four, as well as a dispiriting cup exit away at Ipswich. I'm sorry, I mean a potential giant killing, don't I? I mean, magic of the cup, yeah, lucky cup hat, all that. So there's a strong feeling that the slow slide back to the bottom rung may be inevitable. Of the other teams trapped in the mire, Scunthorpe United have blinked first and sacked manager Neil Cox, leaving the rest of us gloomily anticipating some sort of new manager bounce while we continue our old manager spiral down the shitter.
We need to look at that new manager bounce thing, don't we, really? Because I'm not convinced about it. And also, I don't want you to hang on to all the misery, because Stoke on Saturday, having gone into a 3-0 lead, which was fantastic, conceded 3 goals in 5 minutes to the unformed team of the time, Cardiff, and drew 3-3.
Who were having a new manager bounce, or a caretaker manager bounce.
Yeah, well, the first half was very much Mick McCarthy's.
And then after that, they've forgotten him.
Yeah.
I gather from an email someone sent us that we might actually have a Scunthorpe fan tuning in, so, you know, welcome. Do people tune in? With a dial made out of Bakelite, I don't know.
I don't think they've tuned in since the 60s, have they?
I don't know. So, Oldham are struggling with about a dozen players currently out injured. It's debatable whether any of them will make much of a difference, but you never know, do you? So imagine the excitement when the club tweeted out before the Swindon game last Saturday, "He's back!" Exclamation mark. Who could it be? What brand of saviour is galloping over the horizon? Maybe even one of those improbably rapid changes of manager. Or new manager bounce.
Or Andy Ritchie.
Or Andy Ritchie. No, it was Chaddy the Owl, the bloke in the mascot costume. He's back. No exclamation mark. Chaddy the Owl was sacked previously for budgetary reasons, and the announcement at the time said, rather bizarrely, that he was being found work elsewhere in the organisation. I imagined him squatting in the rafters of the main stand scaring pigeons and small rodents. I suppose small people dressed as rodents.
Yeah, and is the excitement that you might be able to look at the owl pellets and find points inside them?
Points that would count towards the club bingo.
I was reminded this week also because Stoke played Blackpool away and won.
And
I was reminded of a fact that I had known, and somehow it had slipped out of my head, along with how to spell anything, that in 1948, Stoke played Blackpool with a team called the £10 Team, of which 10 players were born within 2 miles of each other in Stoke. Uh-huh. And the 11th player, who was Frank Mountford, was always treated as the outsider because he was born in Doncaster and moved to Stoke when he was 3.
And so, in Stoke, not just the Five Towns, actually.
From Stoke probably to Hanley. I mean, to be fair, the Five Towns are very near each other.
They are very near each other. I just wondered whether,
and also,
whether distinctions were made.
And also there are 6 of them.
Are there?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Hanley, Burslem, Tunstall, Fenton, Longton, Stoke.
Okay.
That's a song I tried to get going once.
Anyway, there have been times when I rather liked Chaddy the Owl. He always used to win the mascot races, for one thing, because the club were too stingy to spring for actual character feet for the costume, so he was able to run in trainers with spikes.
Oh, fantastic.
All the others were flapping along in giant foam paws or claws or fins. And he just used to smoke them every time.
Yeah.
And there was one time when I took my small, you know, at the time, small sons to a night game against Wrexham in the auto glass or similar shield.
Such a good father.
Or cup or trophy. And they were greatly enjoying Chaddy's capering. And at one point, naturally, we went 5-1 down at home. And Chaddy was on his knees in front of us, banging his great big owl head on the advertising hoardings, which was frankly just a hilarious thing.
Yeah. Do you remember that game, Bristol City versus Wolves?
Yeah.
When Wolfie the Wolf had a fight with the Robin.
No, he tried to beat up Bristol City's 3 little pigs, which was fantastic.
They had three little pigs. But why?
But for some one-off occasion. Because this is a thing that happens in mascot world. I went to a game at Walsall once and saw a really odd-shaped mascot approaching down the touchline, sort of brown and vaguely flesh-coloured, and looked a bit like a saddle. Because
they're saddlers, aren't they?
I thought, this is a saddle. And as it got closer, it seemed to have, like, inexplicably, a few black, wiry whiskers sticking out of it.
Okay.
And when it came right up close and you could read what was on its big shirt, I realised it wasn't a saddle, it was a pair of upside-down testicles intended to promote Testicular Cancer Awareness Day. Hell of a job for someone. David gets
home.
Good day at the football, Dave. I don't want to talk about it.
Do you imagine that they haven't told him he's coming? He said, I'm ready to put the saddle on. It's going to be annoying. No, there's something we should have said before, actually.
It's a saddle, is it?
No.
Anyway, so it was a weekend of unexpected results last time out. Manchester City undone by Crystal Palace.
Yes.
After build-up in which it seemed like Guardiola wanted to marry Patrick Vieira and touted him as his replacement one day. Maybe he wants to go sooner than we thought.
Yeah.
Palace have looked good, I think, in recent weeks and have drawn some games that they should have won. I guess we'll talk about them a little bit later, but they would have been in a more representative position in the table if they'd won some of their drawn games, I think. Conor Gallagher looks particularly good.
He's a very good player. I remember him playing for Charlton, actually. I think he was on loan from Chelsea and, of course, at West Brom. He looks, and I know this would be a daft thing to say, he looks really fit, doesn't he?
He just runs about a lot.
Like,
he's got a lot of energy, that's for sure. And it's at long last possible to see the point of Christian Benteke, I think.
Yeah.
And as quite often happens, City got rattled by going behind and had Eric Laporte sent off, didn't they? The top teams have such a sense of entitlement that when the wheels come off, it's quite likely they make things worse by lashing out. And look at United last week. Pogba went, Ronaldo should have gone. They're so entitled to win those games that something goes in their heads.
They get a bit like a small child at their birthday party, crying and screaming because they haven't got the presents that they expected.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Liverpool had an unexpected setback as well. Went 2 up and cruising against Brighton, had a third disallowed for an accidental handball, and then pegged back to 2-2 by a couple of really good goals. And Stoke's Graham Potter,
exactly.
Then immediately touted as a possible Newcastle manager.
Immediately. Well, and England manager too.
And England manager,
These things happen all the time. My favourite thing last weekend, because I did spend the weekend actually watching nearly all of the live football, apart from when I went to Stoke, obviously.
Now you can say it's your job.
Was the phrase, when Norwich played Leeds, did they not?
Yeah.
And was the phrase from the commentator, and a great game this, a game full of history, two of the founder members of the league.
Oh, shut up.
Yes. And he meant the Premier League.
Of course he did.
Not imbued with history at all, Norwich v Leeds. Very annoying.
Anyway, talking about Graham Potter being a possible Newcastle manager, Newcastle, not so much of a surprise this one, unless you expected the Saudi money to have an immediate effect, went down 3-0 to Chelsea in a game that featured a couple of really great thunderbolt goals from Reece James, who was then touted as England's best right-back until Trent Alexander-Arnold set up two goals for Liverpool on Wednesday. And Gareth Southgate said, did you see Kieran Trippier, though? He did quite a good pass right at the beginning of that game.
Do you know, that's so funny, because it's that idea that people, that certainly journalists, can't think beyond 5 minutes after what's happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And once, long time ago, when I went to see a Stoke game, and in the programme, it had the kid who was the mascot or ball boy or whatever he was, and he was asked for his favourite Stoke player, and he chose Paul Barron. Right, who only ever played one game for us, and it was the previous game, and he kept a clean sheet. I thought that was great.
That is. Now, Newcastle, of course, have been turned down by Antonio Conte and Unai Emery, who quite reasonably took a look at their plan to be in the Champions League in 5 years and thought, but I'm in the Champions League now.
I'm
playing Manchester United the week after next, so I'm fine.
Did you see his official comment was that he's 100% committed to Villarreal, but he's grateful for the interest of a great club. And then, obviously, leaked through Guillaume Balague, he said he was uncertain about the club's strategy. He thought they showed a lack of vision. Their rushed approach was insulting. And there was no actual offer, but the club seemed to be announcing that he'd already
accepted whatever they hadn't offered him yet.
Which was great, except wouldn't it be nice if there'd been a moral element to it? There's never a blinking moral element.
You're
a
dreamer. The press and the pundits had their managerial bloodlust up also for when Man United faced Spurs a week after being taken apart by Liverpool. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer seemed to have three games to save his job, and this was the first of them. In the event, there was a three-named managerial casualty as a result of this game, but it was the other bloke. Spurs lost 3-0 without getting a shot on target. Harry Kane got booed. Nuno Espiritu Santo heard chants of "you don't know what you're doing." And just a few hours later, he was gone. 17 games he lasted. Top of the table, manager of the month in August, gone at the start of November.
10 league games, though, you know, and after 10 league games, three managers have been sacked, and another five have been, you know, touted very heavily for the sack. And the thing about Nuno is that he delivered exactly what he did for Wolves. There was no sense in which he changed his approach. They just hadn't done the due diligence. It was like buying a fridge and then complaining you can't grill bacon in it. It was a ridiculous thing.
And Spurs have already gone out and got Antonio Conte, who was the bloke they wanted in the first place.
Yes, well, they'd been turned down a lot, hadn't they, in the summer?
They were turned down by Fonseca and Pochettino could come back.
And Howe, I think.
And Gattuso, I think.
Yes, that's right. In fact, Bruno Brooks was briefly the favourite, wasn't he?
Bruno Brooks. Bruno Brooks isn't available, then you're stunk.
You really are in trouble.
But anyway, so, he's got a bit of... He was supposed to be... hanging on for the United job.
What, Bruno Brooks?
No, yes, that's right. No, Antonio Conte was supposed to be hanging on for the United job, but then United beat Spurs, and he thought, he's got to see more than a couple of weeks ahead. Solskjaer's going to go next week, isn't he, when City tank them 8-0 on the weekend?
We don't know. I mean, to be fair, this podcast, I should say, is all about not kowtowing to the big clubs, isn't it? You know, we don't want to do what they tell us to do. We don't want to expect what they expect. But, you know, I'm going to cave in today. Yeah. I'm going to call me weak. But I am going to do exactly what Ole Lardinar Gunnar Solskjaer has told me to do. He said, I've always enjoyed criticism. Keep that coming. That's fine. So I'll do that. Call me weak, but I'm doing it.
That's pretty weak, Nick. Yeah. Anyway, now, the idea that the Spurs would sack the manager after losing at home to United is a huge put-down for United, which I quite like. That they were so bad the week before that the idea of losing to that pile of crap was more than Spurs could stand. And that used to be an Oldham thing a few years ago. We'd beat someone, and next thing you knew, the other team had sacked the boss as though losing to Oldham was just the fucking limit.
Yeah.
Anyway, United's defence looked a lot sounder, didn't they, with Raphael Varane back, and then he got injured and is out for a month. Yeah. So you wonder whether that might be it, don't you, for Solskjaer?
Well, they got lucky again. They got away with it at Villarreal, didn't they?
They did.
Last-minute goal. Got them a draw after Villarreal should have won at Old Trafford. And, you do wonder. I mean, somebody said this a couple of weeks ago, is that, you know, yes, they win at Spurs, but then the next time they don't do it well, he's right back where he was
right
before.
But that, as you say, the press aren't looking more than like 2 or 3 days
either side.
The weekend was also notable for West Ham sneaking level with Manchester City into the top four after beating Aston Villa in the David Cameron derby. You remember that David Cameron was apparently a Villa fan to suck up to Prince William, most likely, but then in a speech seemed to support West Ham, and it was a speechwriter's fault, I think. I just forgot which team, I just knew the shirts were the same colour as his fuckwit face.
Yes. but also, in the cause of political balance, we should also say that Tony Blair had claimed to have seen Jackie Milburn play for Newcastle.
And I took the piss out of Roy Hattersley earlier on. The most balanced political joke ever written. Quietly, though, while everyone has been banging on about the top three and how they're miles ahead of everyone else, the Hammers have been keeping pace.
Fantastic.
Their best top-flight unbeaten run for 35 years. Since the start of this calendar year, only City and Chelsea have taken more points. And even though there have been attempts to explain this by pointing out the fact that they score more goals from set pieces than anyone else, having Souček and Zouma and Dawson and Ogbonna and Antonio, who are all really good at them, West Ham have been playing some really good stuff.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's something else. I mean, obviously, nearly everything drives me mad, but what you get is, you know, West Ham, well, they score a lot of their goals from set pieces. Arsenal scored most of their goals from set pieces. They've added that to their game, and that's what they've been missing. It's a completely the opposite.
Well, it's just another dimension to what you can do, how you can win a game. I mean, David Moyes has worked wonders, hasn't he? And he knows what he's doing, obviously. You know, the Europa League game this week was his 1,000th in management, so he's now only 602 behind Neil Warnock. And it's a bit late for this year, but if you're looking for a Halloween mask for next year, I urge you to check out a David Moyes bubblegum card from the 70s. Just Google David Moyes Dunfermline. That'll come as will your lunch.
Is it the big ginger what would you call it, beehive?
Trust me, when you see this, you won't be looking at his hair.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay.
Anyway, so West Ham are apparently in talks to sell a 27% stake to Czech billionaire Daniel Kretinsky for $150 million. And he's made a pile buying up unwanted coal and gas-fired power stations, betting against the trend towards environmentalism. Still, at least he doesn't seem to have had anyone killed.
Sorry, against the trend towards...
Yes.
I thought when you said Czech billionaire, I thought he was like De La Rue and made checks, but there you go.
Oh, no. And maybe they'll get a check bounce. What do you think?
I'm not even going to go and join you.
No, exactly. But apparently he owns Slavia Prague, where West Ham got Souček and Soufal from.
Uh-huh.
And this could be, you see, a prelude to a full takeover, but that won't happen yet on account of something called the anti-embarrassment clause. Do you know about this?
I'd like to invoke it in my own life.
Exactly. When it's such a bonus to have such a thing. But when David Sullivan took on a 99-year lease for the Olympic Stadium, at bargain basement rates to save the government's blushes over what seemed like it might become an embarrassing white elephant, there was a clause inserted which said that 20% of any future profit on selling the club would go to the taxpayer for the stadium. And the anti-embarrassment clause expires in March 2023, after which Sullivan and David Gold can keep all the profit if they sell up.
Oh, that's
so
fantastic.
Kretinsky will have to wait.
And just on the subject of managers being sacked, I don't feel so sorry for them. Did you read about Maurizio Romero in the Argentinian third division, who's the manager of Ferro de General Pico, who lost 3-1 to Huracan? And with 10 minutes to go, there was a pitch invasion and a fan shot him. They shot him. But what I love about it was he was shot in the armpit, which makes me think either, one, he had his hands up, or two, he was starting the Mexican wave. And
in
therefore,
which case you'd have shot him.
Justifiable. Entirely justifiable. And finally, on managers, I just want to say, you know, Newcastle, if you think that Eddie Howe is going to change your club, this is purely, it's not purely my opinion, but this is a purely personal opinion, but I have a feeling that other people will say the same. The reason people think that Eddie Howe plays attractive attacking football is because Eddie Howe says so. That is the only reason. I have been looking this up and, you know, trawling the internet, which is not something I find very easy, I have to say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people agree with me. The worst time-wasting bugger in the world. That Bournemouth side were just painful and still are under Scott Parker, I have to say. So that's an awful thing. I think we're going to have a little break.
No, we're going one more. We're talking about Kretinsky having his coal-fired power stations and gas-fired power stations.
Oh, yes.
And being environmentally, what's the word, unfriendly. Yes. And this last weekend in Glasgow, 120 world leaders assembled for the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change Conference. It's known as COP26 because it's the 26th time they've done it. And the COP stands for Conference of Parties, which is terrible.
That's
terribly weak,
isn't it?
But the alternative was
Okay.
But anyway, the most famous and substantive of these conferences resulted in the Paris Accord of 2015, the agreement that Trump pulled America out of as his first order of business when he was elected, because it was a thing that Barack Obama liked. And climate change activist Greta Thunberg described the whole thing in three words, all of which were blah. I mean, she's right, of course, it's just a big talking shop. But the one big announcement they managed to make was an agreement to significantly reduce methane emissions, which are the most damaging ones, apparently, by 2030, which is great, except that Russia and China weren't there. So it's a bit like the bloke from the Neighbourhood Watch saying, good news, we've got everyone on the street to agree to stop nicking cars, apart from Gary the Getaway Driver and Nicolas Cage out of Gone in 60 Seconds. But the other thing, which is of interest to us, is called the Race to Zero, not a summary of Oldham's current business plan, a set of climate change targets, which FIFA have signed up to, unbelievably. And that's the easiest bit, isn't it? Agreeing targets, doing anything at all about hitting them, that's another matter. The Premier League signed up to, by the way, and the Olympics and Formula E, not Formula One, because in order for them to take part, they'd have to actually become Formula E, racing Priuses around Battersea Park. But of course, football doesn't actually produce any greenhouse gases as an industrial byproduct, except when Gary Neville is talking. And 70% of football's carbon footprint is caused by fans' travel, by planes and trains and automobiles. So if football as a whole is going to contribute to the Race to Zero at all, they have to either ban away fans from travelling or reduce the number of games and the distances involved. And they're not going to do that, are they?
No, they're not.
You can see. I mean, FIFA's next World Cup covers the whole of the North American continent and involves 48 teams instead of 36, so loads more flights, loads more longer flights, loads more emissions. Not only that, they want to do it every 2 years, which will double them, won't it?
Yeah.
And UEFA the same, just revamping the Champions League and increasing it by 87.5%.
That's right, 180 games instead of 96. I think this is a subject we're going to have to come back to.
I think so, yeah. I mean, this whole thing is football being is so inordinately proud of its influence on global opinion. And is so it's using it, it's using this to clean its brand. It's called greenwashing.
Yeah, yeah.
Paying lip service to principles to spruce up your brand.
And it also means you can have a list of four, which are China, Russia, FIFA and UEFA, basically. Just one thing I did notice, which was rather wonderful. One of the big environmental campaigners is Hal Robson-Kanu of West Bromwich Albion and Wales, which is brilliant. And he's very engaged and he clearly, you know, he's erudite about it and very committed and it's great. But it is a bit like finding out that Danny Ings is leading the fight against malaria. But I also think, as a sports person going into politics, it's better than Buster Mottram.
Well, yeah, but you yes, of course. But you think, what can football do? You know, they could take the other knee, one for racism, one for climate change.
Yeah, and
you know,
pray.
So the players are actually kneeling down, and with their rainbow laces undone to symbolise how far we still have to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, the climate is having an effect already on sport. You know, the typhoon that affected the Rugby World Cup, the Sochi Winter Olympics had to import snow. And apparently by 2050, flooding could affect half the league's grounds on an annual basis. It won't be affecting Oldham. We're up in the hills and we won't be in the league.
And let's be positive. Good news for sailing. Now, we're going to come back to that because it's a massive topic and I think there's lots to talk about.
Sure.
And in a moment, we're going to have our guest. Today's guest is a wonderful comedian whose football credentials are impeccable. In fact, when I called him about coming onto the show, he was on his way to the London Stadium to watch Crystal Palace play West Ham. He's an excellent columnist, as well as being a brilliant broadcaster, with his triple pillars of the Mark Steele Lectures, the Mark Steele Solution, and Mark Steele's in Town. Please welcome, unsurprisingly, Mark Steele.
Thank you, good people. Thank you very much. Joe, when you were talking, about the Olympics and the pentathlon and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, this is my favourite moment of the Olympics. And, because I can watch any sport, absolutely anything. And indeed listen to it. And so early one morning, it was going on in Japan, I was driving about and I had the Olympic coverage on and they went to the trampolining, right? And this was brilliant because the commentator, who's someone I've met a few times, was lovely, but she was really nice because she said, look, I don't really know anything about trampolining. And it was the woman, Bryony, someone or other, and she got a bronze medal indeed. And I swear, right, I will do all of her commentary. This is the totality of her commentary, she said. And so, Bryony, just getting on the trampoline now. And then you heard, quick, quick, quick. And then she went, well, that seemed to go quite well.
That's radio.
Can you imagine in the days before television pictures? We're going now to the Olympics in Rome. So you could say anything, couldn't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I once met Barry Davis, who said that he'd been sent to the wrestling at some Olympics, I don't know where. And he said, so I commentated on the wrestling. I did as much research as I could. I didn't really know what was going on. And there was a Turkish bloke and a Bulgarian bloke or whatever. And then I sort of did the whole commentary. And about 3 days later, I met someone who came in to talk about the wrestling or something. And he said, oh, yeah, you know, on your commentary, you've got the two competitors the wrong way round. Completely the right. And what, he could have said anything, couldn't he? No one knew.
That's one of the things I do love about the Olympics is there are sports in which I have no idea if somebody's done well or badly. And then at the end, they'll go, well, that's a very disappointing performance. And I'm thinking, why?
You only learn about for the few minutes that you're watching. But it's the same for the people who are commentating on it. They've only just learned about it half an hour before.
And even the boxing, because they only do three rounds, you've no real idea. It's all technical stuff. You know, if somebody isn't lying on the floor, I don't really know who's
winning. No, and even then, it turns out that you get an extra point for that.
Yeah.
I did actually hear Barry Davis, I think it was Barry Davis once when I was watching the Olympics, say the words, and you have to say, that's a critical moment in the history of Algerian judo.
Well, there's those Coleman balls, obviously, but there's that great, the David Hemery gold medal. You know that one, don't you?
Yeah.
And Hemery's got the gold, Azarenko's got the silver, and who cares who's got the bronze? Because it's gold for Hemery, it's gold for Great Britain, and it was Sherwood of Great Britain who's got the bronze.
Also bronze for Great Britain.
Yeah. And also he was Steve Sherwood, the Watford goalkeeper's brother.
Yeah, good Lord.
I've just brought it back to football there.
Okay. Well, nursed. Yes. Tremendous.
So obviously there's always things to talk about with UEFA and FIFA, but let's start with Crystal Palace, because I have to say, I've been surprised, you know, in the way that I don't really know that much, but it's felt for years like the summer is full of just, if we can hang on to Zaha.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You think one day... They've got to stop relying on two or three players. But this season has been a revelation, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and they're really good. They are really good players. There's people like McArthur and Joel Ward, and that have been there Ward's been there since before Palace were promoted, which is 8-9 years ago now, and McArthur since that season after. And they've been really good players. And I think Hodgson will never be short of a cup of tea around Palace. I hope not anyway. He's a lovely.
Yeah.
But there is, he did get to a point where it was just like, no, the important thing is not to lose no matter who we're playing. Even if it's, the other team's just putting out its pets. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But the important thing is not to lose. So we'll have like four at the back and then six more at the back, and then just, you know, because some of them kittens can be nippy, so just
to 14th, between 14th and 17th, job done.
Well, we might well still be 14th and 17th under Vieira, but people are so, I know, brilliant. You both know this. The thing is with supporting a team that isn't one of the top teams is that the expectations, you get a few idiots, but the expectations, they're brilliant. And I've actually been told off around Crystal Palace two or three times by just for saying, because people go, it's so brilliant, it's brilliant down there, it's so exciting. And then you go, just a shame we've made a couple of silly mistakes and given away goals and not. And then you get told off. Don't matter. Yeah. What do you want? It's exciting. And I think that's brilliant. And the fact that we've got the same number of points as we would have under Hodgson, but just in an exciting way.
There's been close to getting more points there. I went to see the game away, Palace played away at Arsenal.
And
they worked their way into that game. They were controlling that game. And it was like they were on top by the end until like 93 and a half minutes. And then they just went to pieces for a minute. And
that's the flaw of football, isn't it? If you go to pieces for one minute, that seems to go very badly.
Or 5 minutes for us last Saturday when we conceded three goals. I think the Hodgson thing always reminds me because, you know, he's of an age that you can't really be too cross with him. And it's a bit like, you know, your grandfather, or in our case, probably our fathers, you know, they're getting the map out and you're going, Dad, you know, there's a sat-nav in this car, don't you? And they say, actually, it doesn't matter. You know, if that's the way you want to do it, you carry on.
Yeah, I think the one that got it, that was Palace against Fulham last season. And Fulham were really, really terrible at that time. And he set it up with just like eight at the back, and we didn't have a shot on goal in the whole match. And he was very, very pleased because it was 0-0. And I think at that point people thought, oh, Roy. That's like, oh, granddad. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's nice with the map. But we are now sitting in a river.
Yeah. Just sit down and have a bit of a kick.
Yes. And I have to say, the phrase, oh, Gareth, comes to mind there.
Oh, well, also,
That you had, who has also been accused of being too defence-minded, Gareth Southgate. Mm.
Let's say actually, sorry, yeah, but
yeah,
all
no,
that.
No, don't
because,
be sorry.
I didn't speak to him at all, but last week, this is very exciting, and there's lots of people quite rightly excited about this. So this time last week, as we sit here, I was lucky to be invited to the opening of the Crystal Palace Academy. And this was a brilliant, brilliant thing. So this is a really exciting thing. And this is like the board of Palace over the last 10 years. And they're great. They've rescued the club. And then this was their ambition more than anything else. You know, we get relegated one day or whatever, but we want to leave something, a bit of a legacy, you know, a bit like the Medici's or whatever, you know, whatever. We want to leave a legacy. Yeah. Never mind a viaduct. We'll have a football academy.
Yeah, it's a legacy of cruelty and torture.
There's all that. Leaving that aside, leaving the torture aside, then a nice little building with a dome on it.
Yeah.
You know, so it swings and roundabouts, isn't it? Right, so...
It's a lot like St James's Park, actually, now.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, we had a joke about that, because there's a gallow gate end there, isn't there? We said that when they're showing around.
Well,
you're late, that, Your Majesty. You see, because that's where we used to hang people and all that. But...
Yeah, go on.
That's your hobby.
So this academy thing, brilliant, brilliant thing. It's absolutely remarkable in Beckenham. Extraordinary, beautiful facilities and stuff. And it's all sort of... And Southgate was there to officially open it. He did a brilliant speech about, you know, this isn't just about football. This is about the kids coming in, and it's giving them a little bit of... making them feel wanted and all that. Just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing. And then there's Damien Delaney, who was a marvellous character for Palace and the centre of defence for a lot of these Premier League years. He was a very, very sort of core commander, and he's very sort of, you know, I think he's very like an old punk attitude to life, you know. And I was very odd. I was just talking to him in this massive dome thing that's been built, beautiful thing. And I was amazing, isn't it? And he said, "Oh, I'd fucking hate it if Roy was here. It's too posh for me." He said, I'd be scared to tackle anybody in case he spoiled the fucking grass.
Speaking about the Saudi thing, the Saudi takeover of UK, it was Palace, of course, that had that the anti-Saudi banner, wasn't it? Which actually had the word beheadings on it, which I thought was going even further.
It was fantastically sophisticated, wasn't
and
it?
And that is apparently being borrowed, isn't it, by Brighton?
Oh, is
next
it?
Week.
Good Lord!
It's a breakthrough. That's wonderful. That's bloody puts anything anybody ever does in the Middle East
it's the equivalent of Camp David, isn't it? Brighton and Palace working together.
Eagle-Seagull Accord.
An Eagle-Seagull Accord. Yes, well, where I sit with my lad... He spotted that, you know, with sort of near the front in that stand where all the nutcases are, along about sort of 30, starts about 30.
All the moral gentlemen.
Yeah. No, but they're lovely. I meant nutcases in the most affectionate way. And he went, look. And turned around, and there it was, this banner. And it was, you're right, it was very, very, it wasn't just some tatty, you know, if it was down to the left, it would be some tatty thing, wouldn't it? With the words, or with a cut, with the Newcastle, with spelt wrong.
It would just be, "You Arab fuckers."
Exactly.
This is
like
the
same. But with the R and S of fuckers would just be a little tiny because they hadn't got enough room for it. Yeah. But this was a magnificent work of art. And you're right, it had a sort of checklist of all the things that the government did, beheadings, torture, executions and so on. And then,
And they were under the fit and proper persons
under the
list.
Fit and proper
that's
persons,
it, yeah.
Exactly,
It's actually... the only bit of real dissent I've seen about the whole thing. You don't get players coming out about nothing, nobody saying anything, really. I mean, the papers are a bit.
Anton Deck not said anything?
Building up. They're obviously, you know, they're gluing themselves to slip roads of the M25 at the moment. They've got other things to do. Yes.
I'm an infidel celebrity. Get me out of
here. you're absolutely right. It was, it's disappointed me, there's been no dissent from no discernible dissent from Newcastle fans. I think that's a shame, but I suppose that's testament to how much Mike Ashley was loved, that they just think, "Oh Christ, a bloody appalling dictatorship has taken over our club. At least he's not Mike Ashley."
It's also that the dream of the average football fan is what we need is a sheikh.
That's
the dream. Yeah, you know, and they don't. It's not looking into what a sheikh is or does.
Well, no. It's very much the phrase, "Sir, we can win stuff, and all you want is my soul.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I know.
It makes you realise if ISIS had been smart, instead of blowing things up, they'd have bought a series of Premier League clubs.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they'd have, Well, I tell you what, I don't care about all the politics and all that, and all the caliphate and what goes on out there, but they can get us a decent bloody midfielder, which is what we've been after.
If we can get between 14th and 17th, I'll be happy.
I'll be happy.
We just call them Islamic State, not so-called Islamic State. Yeah.
No, that's what we call them.
Oh, God, there was one I saw a letter from the Newcastle Supporters Trust, and it began, "Your Majestic Excellency." Oh, Jesus Christ, like something out of the bloody 15th century in a Tudor royal court. You don't have to be that grovelling. What about just "Your Excellency"?
DMO.
MBS.
Oh, we are indeed honoured to have you here, all great beheaded executiony people. I would gladly be executed by you if it meant that we could get a draw against West Ham.
And if you have any plates and cups that need drying, I'm your man.
I don't blame the Newcastle fans. I think, you know, this should have been stopped long before and at a higher level.
Well,
really.
But the thing is, the whole fit and proper person thing that the Football League have and that the Premier League have and the other sports have. The thing is, it's more or less unenforceable. You know, they can't block. The only grounds on which they could block the Newcastle thing was whether the state was going to actually own the club. And once they've bypassed that, there isn't actually anything.
By changing the name to another name.
Changing the name of the country. Yeah. But no, once they call themselves the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia and not Saudi Arabia,
even though
it's the same people and it's the same money and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Once they do that, then the fit and proper person thing is toothless. There's nothing they can do to stop.
It's just a
business thing. It's a straight business investment.
But to be fair, on Newcastle fans, this is an age-old thing. You know, bread and circuses. This has been going on for thousands of years. People are happy and don't think too much about politics if they're getting what they think that they want, which is, you know, a successful team. I'm not saying it makes it all right, and I'm not saying it wouldn't be lovely to hear some dissent, but, you know, it's not that unlikely that, you know, your team would do the same.
Quite possibly. And I think and it's only luck that I happen to be sort of support a team that seems to be owned by people who've got a very different attitude. He was one of the two Premier League spokespeople. Chairs who spoke out against it. I can't remember who the other one was. Parrish was one.
Yes, but funnily enough, the top six spoke out against it under a different forum.
Yes,
so that was at the Premier League management meeting, I think. But the top six all sort of released, you know, we need to be looking at this.
Well, because they're worried that Newcastle will want into the European Super League.
Well, that's exactly why.
Yes.
You know, none of these things are motivated by morality. They're all motivated by money, not in Steve Parrish's case. But actually, you were talking about your new training ground, and I was just going to say, I love the sort of perspective on the... So, Nodes Jordan Parish.
Yes.
You know, that's been an incredible change, hasn't it?
Yeah. That is a sort of a shift towards a much more liberal...
Yeah.
Yes, because Nodes and Jordan are not the most liberal people.
No, not at all. And must have been quite frustrating to have. I mean, Nodes famously managed Crystal Palace for a bit.
Yeah, he just decided to come in and manage the club and stuff. I know. I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't know. And at the time, of course, we supported him. But we had the... But I don't think, in our defence, I don't remember anybody ever writing "Your Majestic Excellence."
Perhaps
he'd still be there if he had.
But on the other hand, you know, he set a precedent that maybe Mohammed bin Salman is going to go, "I'm picking the team this week." Which would be fantastic.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And, and anyone who, Mr. Sitter... then disappeared for several years.
Well,
or foot off.
Yeah.
Or if it's a header, nobody's heading the ball. No.
Management by bone saw, is that?
But Gary Neville did speak. I know you refer to him as a
arsewipe. I think.
Yes.
Chrissy.
Yes. isn't Gary Neville at the moment? I think Gary Neville is currently the official leader of the opposition in this country, isn't he? Pretty much.
Pretty much. Well, he's. his view of the strength of his own speaking out on things,
yes,
has become a quite an enormous thing.
I like him. I do a bit of his show actually, which I if I'll be indulgent enough, which is about Gary Neville. That if you don't watch football at all or have any interest in it, but you live with someone who does, you can watch him and Carragher.
Yeah,
they just get a great big bit of the game, and they just draw circles round people with Gary Neville going, "What I want to know is what's he doing there? He's not trying. He's lost his man, and the goalkeeper. He's not where he should be. And what's he doing? The referee, the games. And let's have a look in the crowd. This fella's in seat B21. He should be in F19. What's he doing there? What do you think about it, Jimmy? Well, I'm saying to myself, what's he doing there? Exactly. What's he? Don't forget to tune in tomorrow night for another edition of What's He Doing There.
They're the physical embodiment of hindsight, aren't they?
But brilliant. I love them. When Attenborough retires, you should be take over. I'm looking at this wildebeest and I'm saying to myself, what's he doing? He's lost his herd. He's not
tracked
back.
There's a lion there. He's not going to come into that area. The lion's going to see him. You know, he's going to cut him out straight away.
The thing with the king of the jungle, you can't give him that much space. He's got eaten. I've no sympathy. What's he doing there?
Do you know, famously, they don't talk off stage.
Neville and Carragher?
Yeah. I'm joking! I'm doing the double act thing. and your face was like, really? Wow,
oh, no! Sometimes I'm like, me mum or something really might do. My mum's like that. She'll go, oh, are you doing any shows this week, dear? Yeah. And I can say anything. I'll go to Venus. Oh, well, I hope they're paying your travel. That's what I've just done.
My wife was. I actually gave up doing it on her after a bit because she would always fall for it. But my favourite was that she believed me when I told her that in Holland, in your driving test, you don't have to do a hill start.
I believe that. I would have believed that. No, it makes sense when you think about it. It makes sense. But you do have to learn how to reverse out of a dyke.
And drive while high. Do people say high anymore? I don't know.
Yes, but now we have to try the reverse. Yeah. We reverse round the corner while we've had some skunk, which is good.
Yes. Many times people are coming here to Amsterdam to party. Partying is fine. But when you're driving the car...
I once got, when I was about 22, I was in Holland. This is the most hallucinogenic experience. It's never been my thing, particularly drugs. But I did at this occasion. I had this space cake at the famous Melkweg club. And I had this space cake. And did the classic thing of having a bit of this space cake and then another. I thought, this isn't making any difference. Or another bit of space cake. And I thought, this is rubbish. And I remember looking up and thinking, it's a beautiful night. The stars are lovely and all that. And then about a minute later, and thought, hang on, I'm indoors. That shouldn't be stars. And I was completely off me face. And I got a cab back. I remember where I was staying. And I got this cab back. And I thought I was doing, like, however fast we were going, in my mind, we were going about 20 times quicker. And I grabbed hold of the driver and said, can we go more slowly, please? Yeah. And he kept saying this. And he said, but we are now doing maybe 5-6 kilometres an hour. We must have been crawling along. And he would sort of turn a corner and go, ah! Like James Bond's driving.
Just a quick one on UEFA and FIFA, and so the general state of the game. And also, you know, we were talking about global warming and all that sort of stuff, but they just want more and more and more and more games. And it's unfathomable.
It is unfathomable. And I think this is a thing that I think is, that I worry about. If you've sort of, well, you must have both watched sport in America.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what struck me was one, a couple of times when I've watched sport in America, is that the result is secondary to the spectacle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that is something that's very, very peculiar if you're used to watching sport not in America. So, you know, if you go to the baseball, it's a great spectacle. There's loads of things that are brilliant. The food, and I went when my daughter was quite young, and there was a big Coca-Cola bottle thing that was a slide in San Francisco. And she just went on that 40 times while me and her brother were watching the game and stuff. Yeah, so it's great. All that's great. But the game, it's almost incidental. And then they go, the seventh inning stretch, and hey, if the camera sees you, don't forget to wear. Yeah. And I thought, well, that... No, but the result doesn't seem to matter here. And if you're doing that in the crowd, all right, at the start or something, imagine if it's 10 minutes from the end of a Premier League game, it's 1-1 and it's all tense.
Well,
and then
why the game won't take off over there. They can't, because they can't also cope with the idea that the final result might be a draw.
You
might play for a draw. What you're saying is what I feel about when I watch the 100. I think you watch the 100 and you're all forever looking at people in the crowd. You can't remember the result 20 minutes after
it's finished. Exactly. No, I agree. And I think that there's a sort of sense of we can make sport bigger by making it like that. So it's just a spectacle and the result, this way, that way, whatever.
Exactly. And by multiplying the amount of teams in European competition, you are making a lot of the games have no meaning whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you say about what would happen if 5 minutes from the end of a crucial game, everybody had to stop and look at the television, that's VAR for you. That's exactly what can happen. Yeah. You know, so that's depressing.
But it's like in America, they try to anaesthetize the you from the pain of a defeat by making this. You know, even if you lose, there's the spectacle.
Yeah.
There's the bloke going down the aisle with like a sort of petrol pump of beer that will fill, with on a backpack that will fill you up. You know,
there's always
something else. It's to take away whatever.
If you're 1-0 down and you're pressing for a go, you know, or if it's the cricket and there's five overs left on you, you know, or whatever, and you're the last batter's in and all that, and someone comes around with a petrol pump of beer, the only possible decent response is, fuck off, mate.
Yeah, well, like the girl at the end of the Nations League final just the other week, where the camera picked out this girl chewing on a Spain flag, and it was injury time, and Spain were losing to France, and the camera picked her up in a big close up because they found a pretty girl, you know, and what she's supposed to do is see herself on the screen and wave up and what she did was she saw she was on the screen, looked at the camera, and stuck two fingers up. Out of my face. There's a minute to go.
Distressed Spanish lady.
Yeah. So I think what we're saying, I'm going to try and summarise. I'm not saying that this is definitely what we all agree on. So basically, no VAR, lots of people sticking two fingers up at a camera.
Yes.
That's what we want.
VAR is probably a slightly different issue because I don't know where I'm at. What are you completely and utterly against it?
I think what it tries to do is it tries to make an absolute science out of a game that relies on error. You know, that's unforced human error. The ball is round. These are all the things that actually bring excitement into it. And so part of that excitement is being frustrated because you think that decision was wrong, but accepting it from the referee. By doing this, you're saying we can definitively say what happens during the game. But that's the only reason I sort of agree with you, I think.
Flip-flop on it. If you're watching a game and Ronaldo scores a really good goal and then it gets VAR'd.
Oh, yeah, that's a good thing, obviously.
Then for that moment, you're really enjoying VAR. You know? And then when
something else happens, if a goal's good enough, it ought to stand even if it was illegal.
Headers, volleys and dead good goals.
Exactly. That was the rule of three and in, wasn't it? It had to be a header, a volley or a dead good goal.
Or a dead good goal.
And you know, when you were eight, you had no doubt the difference between a dead good goal and one that was slightly worse than
stuffed,
a dead good goal. Yeah, everybody had to go, no, that wasn't dead.
Have you
good
ever,
goal.
I have, a, you know, I'm not trying to claim any great moral authority, but there have been times when I've watched Palace and we've conceded a goal and then it's gone to VAR and there's been a bit of me thought, oh, don't disallow this. That just sort of makes a mockery of it. And of course, there's a couple of times that it has been disallowed and of course I've been really, but I'm conflicted because I think, oh, really, was there a push? It sort of makes a mockery of it.
When it gets colder, breath will be visible. You know, and it's going to happen, you know.
That's where the line is.
We're going over to Stockley Park and we're going to decide, we've got a philosopher in, whether breath is in fact part of the person. Because breath, of course, will have DNA in it.
Yeah.
You know,
let's say
so therefore, the breath definitely has an advantage. advantage.
Yes, how can we say whether the breath did not have impact upon the game and the defence? Possibly they had to withstand something of the change in the air current.
Of course. And you know, if you do not want to be offside with your breath, you must hold your breath. It's very simple. Why did you not train players?
And if you're breathing in the line of sight of the goalkeeper as well, you know, the chance that that cloud will just obscure his vision.
Yeah, affect the temperature and so on and disorientate the ball.
So as you hit the ball, breathing in is a good thing because it both takes your chest out and the breath isn't coming out.
Yes, your thoughts.
Yeah. Or, it would have been bad for Jeff Hurst, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be terrible for Jeff Hurst.
His puffer style.
Old Jeff Puffer Hurst, yeah. You know, and actually, to take it to its logical conclusion, aqualung. Players should have an aqualung. Yeah. That way the breath isn't going to come out.
It's contained, isn't it? It's contained.
It's contained, yeah.
And also how long, and the build-up, a foul in the build-up. Well, we've looked back to last October and the striker that caused the run that took away one of the defenders really went into a bus lane in Streatham.
Yeah, exactly.
And well, so see, really shouldn't have been on the pitch.
I still think, though, if that happens to Azpilicueta, it's funny.
Yeah.
And so it should be allowed to
Wrap up on the bus lane thing as a final thought, because it just came back in my head, and you know this story. Yeah. Do you know the story about Carlton Palmer signing for Sheffield Wednesday?
Oh, right.
So Carlton Palmer's at West Brom and Ron Atkins at Sheffield Wednesday. He buys him. And the last week he's at West Brom, the big story's over the plate because he's been caught drink driving or he's been banned from driving. Anyway, first day, Ron pulls up in his Bentley or Rover or whatever he has, and who pulls up next to him? There's Carlton Palmer in his car. And Ron gets out and he goes, Carlton, you know, you're banned from driving. And he goes, no, boss, that was at West Brom. Just fantastic. Talk about living in a bubble. Anyway, we all definitely live in a bubble. Thank you very much for listening. Please tell your friends. Please rate the show. Please write reviews. Or just don't do that if you want. Thank you so much to Mark Steele.
Inspiring.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. The Napoleon Bonaparte of podcasts. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's us.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.